Book of Esther and the Story of Purim is a story about Jews in the diaspora. It's a story about Jews in the diaspora who become the focus of the attention of a person who wants to kill them. Their lives become incredibly unstable. Their future is bleak. A death warrant is signed. And if it weren't for something which perhaps we can call, well, the Hebrew would be hashkacha, the English perhaps would be serendipity, the Jews are saved. And the story becomes a story of survival, and it becomes a celebration of survival. But perhaps we need to look at the story in terms of the larger context of the history. The story begins when the Jews are in exile, which means that the Zionist experiment, the first Zionist experiment, did not work. Jews taken out of Egypt, brought to the land of Israel, the land promised to their forefathers. They sinned and they rebelled, and then the unthinkable happened. The temple was destroyed, and they were taken off in captivity. And we can't help but suspect that some of them at that point felt, that really is the end of Judaism. The covenant is broken. How can they possibly ever return? And the Jews at that point were scattered. Perhaps they were united by a common history, but it would seem to be that they no longer believed in a common destiny. They live in a place of a monarch who seems to be a little bit unstable. He opens up his home. He makes lavish parties. Food may not be kosher, and the wine may be even worse. But the Jews feel, why not? We need to fit in. We need to be like everybody else. For how long can we be different? We need to acculturate. We need to become citizens of our new country. And at that moment, it looks even more bleak. Somebody comes who has a hand in this story, a hand in Hashkacha, someone who would be the least likely candidate, someone who's called Haman. Haman, we're told, is from Agag. The rabbis make no mistake about this. They say he comes from the family of Amalek, the royal family of Amalek. And there are Jews living in Persia spread all about, and he turns to the king and says, look at these people, a divided people spread about, and he makes it sound as if we're so dangerous. He makes it sound that the fact that we're not united is something to be very, very concerned about. And what he does is he succeeds in getting this death warrant signed against the Jews. At that moment, the thought of returning to Israel, of building or perhaps even continuing to rebuild the Second Temple, seems impossible. We're not a people, we're not united, we don't have the resources, and we don't have the will. And Haman, with his plan to kill the Jews, sets something else in motion. Haman takes money and he pays off the king, he bribes the king for the right to kill some of the subjects, those dangerous subjects, who he doesn't even mention by name. The king does not seem to be all that decent when he never bothers asking, so who's going to be this candidate for genocide? Nonetheless, as the story unfolds, we know Mordechai, and especially we know the heroism of Esther. And as things turned around, Haman is killed, the Jews are saved. But we need to pause here for a moment, because something very unexpected then continues. When Esther marries this king, perhaps some, if they knew she was Jewish, which they didn't, could have said, look at this, more assimilation into marriage. A Jewish girl made into the palace. Perhaps some would have been proud. Perhaps some would have realized, this is it. This is really the end of our people. So we have a nice Jewish girl in the palace married to this non-Jewish king. And when everything turns around, the aftermath of the story is what's all interesting. Yes, we're saved. And yes, our enemies are killed. And yes, we celebrate. But something else happens afterwards. We return to the land of Israel. Not all of us, and not enough of us, but we return. And we continue to build and to complete the building of the Second Temple. The rabbis point out that it was, in fact, Esther who allowed them to come back. Now, that may seem strange. It was Esther's son, Daryavish, who allowed the Jews to come back. According to the chronology in Jewish sources, Daryavish was 7 years old when his father died, and he became king, which means that he had a mother, a queen, who was in the background, whispering in his ear, telling him exactly what he should do. Haman succeeded in bringing the Jews together and uniting us as people, focusing us that not just history, but we have a common destiny. By starting this whole process, Haman accomplished many things. The last thing that he accomplished, we also need to pay attention. The Midrash says that the plan which God set in motion took the wealthiest man in the world, who was Haman, so much money he can bribe the king, and all of his money ended up moving over to Mordechai. The rabbis tell us that money was used to build the Second Temple. So on Purim, during the Second Temple, perhaps the Jews had a l'chaim, and they thanked Haman. We're supposed to drink till we can even bless Haman. And they blessed Haman and said, thank you, Haman, for bringing us together as a people. Thank you for giving us direction. Thank you for reminding us that we have the same destiny. And thank you for making a dedication and using your resources and your funds to help us build the Second Temple. Purim Sameach.